Considerations on the system of parochial schools in Scotland and the advantage of establishing them in large towns. This pamphlet was first published in 1819. Money was raised for the erection and partial endowment of 4 schools and schoolhouses, and a good education was then given to upwards of 600 children. There are 3 school systems for the education of a country, each of which is fitted to have its own peculiar influence on the general habit and improvement of the people among whom it operates. There is first the wholly unendowed system. Education, instead of being in any shape patronized or instituted, may be left merely as an article of native and spontaneous demand among the people of a country. Each who has a desire for it might, in this case, purchase it, just as he would do any other object of desire. He would, of course, have to pay the full and natural price for the article, or, in other words, the fees of education must, under such a system, be adequate to the entire maintenance of the teachers. This way of it has never been found effectual to the object of originating, in any country, a habit of general education. It does not call out the people. It, in fact, abandons them to the chance of their making a proper and original motion of their own, and this motion is never generally made. And, had we time for looking so far back as to the first causes, the reason of this might be rendered abundantly obvious. The truth is that there is a very wide distinction between the moral or intellectual wants of our nature, on the one hand, and the merely physical wants of our nature, on the other. In the latter case, the want is always accompanied with a strong and urgent desire for relief, and, just in proportion to the greatness of the want, is the intensity of the desire. The want of food is accompanied with hunger, and the want of liquids with thirst, and the want of raiment with cold. And these form so many powerful appetites of demand, which among a people, though left to themselves, will be fully commensurate to the whole extent of their physical necessities. And hence it is that whatever call may exist for a national establishment of teachers, a national establishment of bakers, or butchers, or tailors, or shoemakers, is altogether superfluous. But the reverse of all this holds true of the moral or intellectual wants of our nature. The want of virtue, so far from sharpening, has the effect of extinguishing the desire for virtue. The same is true of the want of knowledge. The more destitute we are of these articles, the more dead we are as to any inclination for them. Under the mere operation of demand and supply, there are sufficient guarantees in the constitution of nature that the people will themselves make a primary movement after food. But there is no such guarantee for their ever making a primary movement after instruction. It is not from the quarter of ignorance that we can at all look for the first advance towards knowledge, nor can we ever expect that for this object a people, as yet untaught, will surrender, either for their own behalf or that of their children, any sensible proportion of that money which went to the purchase of their physical gratifications. The night of ignorance is sure to be perpetuated in every land where no extraneous attempts are made on the part of the wealthy and enlightened for the object of its dissipation. And if the wholly unendowed system be incompetent to the effect of planting a habit of education among a people, in the first instance, it cannot be the best system for upholding that habit where it is already established. And far less can it be the best for arresting the declension of this habit in a country, where, if education be upon the decline, the desire for education will be sure to decline along with it. The next system of education is that of free schools. It is in every point diametrically the reverse of the former, and may therefore at first view be regarded as the best for shunning all the evils and all the inefficiency of the former. It is a wholly endowed instead of a wholly unendowed system. It both spares the population the necessity of making the first movement after scholarship for their children, and it spares them the necessity of surrendering for this object any portion of their subsistence. For the completion of such a system, it were enough that schools and schoolhouses should be built in every little district of the land, and such a salary provided for the teachers, as, without the exaction of any fee, would enable them to render a full supply of scholarship to the families at the public expense. In this way, the people would be fully met with an apparatus, broadly and visibly obtruded upon their notice, and yet we are far from thinking that it would either create a native and universal habit of education in a country, or arrest the process of its degradation in learning, or sustain the practice of parents sending their children to school, and so stimulating and watching over the progress of their scholarship as would lead to the formation of a well-taught and a well-informed peasantry. What is gotten for no value is rated at no value. What may be obtained without cost in money is often counted unworthy of any cost in pains. What parents do not pay for the acquirement of, children will not be so urged to toil for the acquirement of. To be away from school or to be idle at school when not a matter of pecuniary loss will far more readily be a matter of connivance. There is no doubt a loss of other advantages, but these, under a loose and gratuitous system of education, will be but held in capricious demand and in slender estimation. The only way of thoroughly incorporating the education of the young with the habit of families is to make it form part of the family expenditure, and thus to make the interest and the watchfulness and the jealousy of parents so many guarantees for the diligence of their children. And for these reasons do we hold the establishment of free schools in a country to be a frail and impolitic expedient for the object of either upholding a high tone of scholarship among our laboring classes, or of rendering the habit at all general, or of perpetuating that habit from generation to generation. And such a system has not a more adverse influence on the scholars than it has upon the teachers. Let a man deal in any article whatever, and there is not a more effective security for the good quality of what he deals in than the control and the guardianship of his own customers. The teacher of a free school is under no such dependence. It is true that he may be paid according to the proficiency of the learners, but the parent who can instantly withdraw his children is a far more jealous inquisitor into this matter than the official examiner, on whose personal interest at least there is no such powerful or effectual a hold. And we repeat it, therefore, that carelessness on the part of the teacher, as well as a remiss and partial attendance on the part of the taught, is the likely fruit of that gratuitous system of education, the aspect and the tendency of which we are now employed in contemplating. It reflects infinite credit on the founders of our Scottish Reformation, that by the tact of a wise and well-discerning skillfulness they have devised a system which dexterously shuns and puts at an equal distance from our peasantry the evil and inconveniences of the two former. It may, for the sake of distinction, be called the medium system of education. It is about 2.5 centuries ago since it had its origin in Scotland. The first advance was made, not by the people at large, but by the founders of this system, and in this way they escaped the inefficiency of what may be called the unendowed method of education. They built schools and schoolhouses and held them conspicuously forth to the view of the population, and they furnished such a salary to the teacher as enabled him not to deal out a free education among the surrounding families, but to deal it out to them upon certain regular and moderate allowances. In this way, they escaped the evils which we have just now ascribed to the gratuitous system of education. The people were not fully met, but they were met halfway. It was not a movement of demand upon their side, in the first instance, which it had been vain to look for. Neither was it a full and altogether gratuitous invitation on the other side. But it was a movement of a proposal from the latter upon certain terms, and this was at length followed up on the side of the people by the movement of a wide and general and almost unaccepted compliance. This result has nobly accredited the wisdom of our parochial institutions. The common people of England and Ireland, left to demand education for themselves, never demanded it. Nor would they, if left to the impulse of their own desire, ever have emerged from the deep and stationary and unalleviated ignorance of the Middle Ages. A great and, in part, a successful effort is making now in behalf of both these countries by a set of active philanthropic societies. By the stir and the strenuousness of these institutions, the people have certainly, in some measure, awakened from the stillness of their unlettered repose, and many young have been called out to scholarship who else would have perished in the dormancy of their forefathers. Still, we hold that there is no security for a system, either of universal or perpetual operation, until it shall cease to be entirely gratuitous, until the people themselves be associated in the support of it by their own payments, until they are led to look on scholarship as worthy of its price, and that price is actually rendered, until learning be so prized by them as to be purchased by them, and this bond be established for its regular prosecution among all their families, that its cost is estimated among the regular outgoings of a family. This is the way in the country parishes of Scotland. The surrender which they have to make for the education of their young is much smaller than it would have been had there been no school or schoolhouse or salary provided by the legislature. Still, however, it is well that they have to make some surrender. It is well that the care of parents over the progress of their children's education should be stimulated by the price which they have to render for it. It is well that by their inspection being thus sharpened, there should be a far closer and more effective security for the diligence of the young than ever could obtain were the education of the country turned into one great and universal charity. We read much of the abuses of chartered and endowed schools for the poor, and it is well that while our schools are so far endowed as to reduce the country price of learning to at least one half of what it would be under a totally unprovided system, it is still well that a fraction should be left to be paid by the parents, and that the teacher should be thus far responsible to them for the performance of his duty and the faithfulness of his public services. The universality of the habit of education in our lowland parishes is certainly a very striking fact. Nor do we think that the mere lowness of the price forms the whole explanation of it. There is more than may appear at first sight in the very circumstance of a marked and separate edifice standing visibly out to the eye of the people with its familiar and oft-repeated designation. There is also much in the constant residence of a teacher moving through the people of his locality and of recognized office and distinction amongst them. And perhaps there is most of all in the tie which binds the locality itself to the parochial seminary that has long stood as the place of repair for the successive young belonging to the parish. For it is thus that one family borrows its practice from another, and the example spreads from house to house till it embrace the whole of the assigned neighborhood, and the act of sending their children to the school passes at length into one of the tacit but well-understood proprieties of the vicinage. And new families just fall, as if by infection, into the habit of the old ones, so as, in fact, to give a kind of firm mechanical certainty to the operation of a habit from which it were violence and singularity to depart, and in virtue of which education has acquired a universality in Scotland which is unknown in the other countries of the world. There has many a distinct attempt been made to supplement the defective education of our cities. But if it have either been in the way of gratuitous education, or in the way of a vast Lancasterian establishment for the general behoof of a wide and scattered community, or in any way which did not bind by the tie of a local relationship the close and contiguous families of a given district to a seminary raised within its limits and to a fixed and stationary teacher at the head of that seminary, then let it be remembered that some of the most essential elements of success have been wanting to the operation. Nor let us be discouraged by the failure of former expedients, which are not at all analogous to the one that we shall venture to recommend, and by which it is proposed to circulate throughout the mass of a crowded population as powerful and pervading an influence in behalf of scholarship as that which has been diffused over the face of our lowland provinces, and diffused so thoroughly as scarcely to leave in our country parishes the exception of a single individual or a single family behind it. But there is still another school system which falls to be considered, not a medium, but what may rather be called a compound system, because made up of the unendowed and the free systems together, though not put together into the constitution of any one single seminary. This compound system is realized in all those places where so many of the schools are wholly free and all the rest of them are wholly unendowed. We have already stated our objection against such an establishment of free schools as would meet the whole population. It is a different arrangement from this, where there is such an establishment of free schools as might provide part of the population with gratuitous learning, and where the remaining part have to pay that full price which obtains in schools that are totally unendowed. This amounts nearly to the actual system which obtains in Glasgow. Our objections to this way of ordering the matter are that as far as free education prevails, a careless estimate of its value and a loose and negligent attendance are apt to prevail along with it. And that many parents, who, under the medium system, could have upheld the habit of purchasing the scholarship of their children, are thereby degraded into an inferior habit. And that there is not a more public way of exposing our people as the subjects of charity than by drawing out their families to a charity school, and that the difference to the comfort of a family is so great between having to pay the full price which an unendowed teacher must exact, and having to pay no price at all, as to make a place in one of the charity schools an object to men who else would be greatly above cherishing any expectation of charity, or preferring any demand for it. And that, as the result of all this, the competition for places is so great as often to elbow out those neediest and most destitute for whom the institution was originally framed. Besides the incalculable mischief of bringing down men who, but for this temptation, would have stood erect and independent to the attitude of petitioners, or in other words, the mischief of carrying the spirit and the desires of pauperism upward by several steps along the scale of society. We affirm one consequence of charity schools with us to have been a diminution in the quantity of education. It is familiar to us all that the applications for admittance are greatly more numerous than the vacancies. In this way, there are many parents who are constantly standing out in the capacity of expectance, and who, under the operation of a hope which turns out to be delusive, are keeping off their children from other schools. Their children are thus suffered to outgrow their opportunities, and many are the instances in which they have stood for years at the gate to which they have been allured by false or mistaken signals of invitation, till the urgent concerns of their trade or their profession at length hurry them away. And that, too, to a condition of life where it was as impossible for them to retrieve any portion of their time for the purposes of education as it was to recall those years which they had so idly spent in ill-directed endeavors to obtain it. In all these circumstances, we hold the medium system which obtains in the country parishes of Scotland to be also in every way the best for its city parishes. Not leavening education without any endowment to the random operation of demand and supply, not so endowing it as to hold out a gratuitous education to all who should require it, not even endowing a restricted number of schools to this extent, and leaving the rest to the necessity of exacting an unendowed price from the scholars who repair to them. But endowing schools so far as will enable the teachers to furnish education to our town families upon country prices, erecting the schools and the schoolhouses, and multiplying these erections till they met the demand and were thoroughly familiarized to the habit of our whole population. It is little known amongst us how much the people of our city parishes have fallen behind the full influence and benefits of such a system. With the exception of schools for Latin, there are almost no vestiges of any such endowment. Instead of any public and parochial edifice for scholarship, held forth to the view of the people and constantly reminding them, as it were, of their duty through the avenue of the senses, the only education for their children which is accessible to them is dealt out from the privacy of obscure garrets, or at most from the single hired apartment of a house, in no way signalized by its official destination, and deeply retired from observation amid the closeness and frequency of the poorest dwelling places. These stations, too, whither children repair for their education, are constantly shifting, and the teachers, being often unconnected by any ties of residence or local vicinity with the parents, there is positively, in spite of the sacredness of their mutual trust, as little of the feeling of any moral relationship between them as there is between an ordinary shopkeeper and his customers. The very circumstance, too, of drawing his scholars from the widely scattered families of a town, instead of drawing them from the contiguous families of one of its parishes, slackens, among these parishes, the operation of that principle which operates so powerfully among the immediate neighbors of a small country village, and where, in virtue of each doing as he sees others do, we behold so sure and so unfailing a currency towards the established schoolmaster on the part of all the population. It forms a mighty addition to all these obstacles, in the way of education, when such a price must be paid for it as might enable the teacher to live on his fees alone. And thus it is that the demand for schooling, which is kept up without abatement in our country parishes, has been most woefully abridged amongst the laboring classes in our towns. Not a few feel tempted by the greatness of its expense to evade the schooling of their families altogether, insomuch that with them the cause of education is altogether extinct. And very many are the parents who feel tempted to reduce the quantity of schooling, insomuch that with them the cause of education is rapidly and alarmingly on the decline. It is a very low estimate of the average expense of good education for reading alone to state it at 5 shillings a quarter or 20 shillings a year. This expense is, in many instances, shunned altogether. And there are hundreds of adults who are utterly incapable of reading, and the number of these is increasing rapidly. The expense is, in many more instances, not shunned. But the period of it is lamentably shortened, so as fully to account for the slovenly and imperfect reading of so many of our artisans and laborers and household servants. The case of these last is that of ignorance under the disguise of education. Theirs is a mere semblance or apology for learning. The individual who, in reading to another, stops and spells and blunders at every short interval, can never read a passage to himself so as readily to understand the subject. To read intelligently, he must read fluently, and therefore it is that there may be a partial scholarship which, for every purpose of moral or literary improvement, is just as worthless as no scholarship at all. The shadow of the good old Scottish habit may be still perpetuated amongst us for one or two generations, and perhaps may be preserved by the annual importations of this habit from the country from ever passing into utter dissipation. But, though the shadow of it should remain, the substance of it will soon be dissipated. Insomuch that, if vice and ignorance stand all together in nearly perpetual association, if an uneducated people be more formidable in their discontent and more loathsome in their profligacy, and more improvident in their economical habits, and more hardened in all the ways of wickedness and impious profanation than a people possessed of the Bible and capable of using it, then we cannot look on the progress of that undoubted decay in scholarship, which is every day becoming more conspicuous in our towns, without inferring a commensurate progress in those various elements of mischief, which go to feed and to augment all our moral and all our political disorders. To extend a right system of parochial education over the whole city is an enterprise greatly too gigantic for any one body of management. The truth is that, did we compute the expense of its full accomplishment, the magnitude of the sum would paralyze any number of philanthropists who could willingly and readily act together for the purpose of bringing round such a consummation. From the vastness of the necessary resources, on the one hand, and the unwieldiness which ever attaches to the movements of any very extended society on the other, we are quite sure that nothing very effectual could be done under a combined plan of operations, and that the agents of such an undertaking would either give it up in despair or retire from it, satisfied that they had done much, when they had scarcely done anything, pointing, it may be, to some showy but superficial achievement as the trophy of their success. To the establishment, it is likely, of one school in each parish, which would only suffice for a very small fraction of the whole, and leave untouched and unprovided by any salutary influence whatever the great mass of the community. But what one body of management cannot do in the gross, several distinct and independent bodies of management might be able to do in the detail. One thing is certain, that any such smaller body will act with an impetus and a vigor of which a vast general society is utterly incapable. This would be the first effect of a subdivision in the field of agency. Let it only be broken down into manageable sections, and the influence will be the same with that which comes upon a man's whole energy and spirit when any concern with which he is associated is so reduced from the hopelessly and impracticably vast as to be brought within the compass of his probable attainment. And when the limit of his enterprise, instead of lying at a distance from him, in the remote and fathomless unknown, is brought so near as to be distinctly visible and likely to be overtaken, and when, by every step in his progress, he feels himself to be approximating to a given termination. In such a state of things, he is cheered and stimulated onwards by every new accession to his means, and every new movement in the execution of his measures. And just because the conclusion of the whole does not stand at an obscure and indefinite interval away from him. And such would be the difference in point both of present alacrity and ultimate success between the operations of one society for parochial schools to the whole of Glasgow and of distinct societies for the same object in each of the parishes of Glasgow. Each would have its own manageable task, and each would be freed from the distractions of too manifold and cumbersome an operation. And each would not only have less to do, but have more in proportion to do with. For it is of importance to remark that by thus dividing the mighty field and assigning its own separate locality to each separate agency, the interest is greatly heightened, and the activity is greatly promoted. And even the feeling of rivalship gives a laudable impulse to each of the distinct undertakings. And the solicitations for aid are carried through each parish and congregation far more closely and productively, when the attention and desire are thus devoted to one small portion of the territory, instead of being weakened by dispersion over the face of the extended whole. It is on these grounds that the Committee of Education for the Parish of St. John have conceived the hope that, by intent perseverance and the use of all those legitimate means which are within their reach, they may at length succeed in the establishment of a right parochial apparatus, or, in other words, may arrive at the result of as many schools and schoolhouses with permanent salaries to each of the teachers as shall be commensurate to the object of a good elementary education, at reduced prices, to all the families in the parish. This will be gradually arrived at by the erection of successive fabrics and the accumulation of as much capital as shall afford by its interest the salaries of the different teachers. Each fabric, it is conceived, may have two schoolrooms in its lower story, and in its upper stories, the two schoolhouses. When the schools cease to be filled to an overflow, this will serve as an indication that the parochial equipment for schooling is completed. We should feel it a public injustice to monopolize for our parish more in the way of aid than legitimately belongs to it, and we hold it necessary on this account to explain how far we mean to extend our solicitations, and what are the resources which we leave untouched for other parishes. All who are connected with the parish, either by residence or by property, we count ourselves free to apply to for such contributions as they may be prevailed upon to render in behalf of this strictly parochial object. Nor do we deem this in any way capable of being construed into an inference with the claims and the fair expectations of other parishes. But further, it must be evident that did each parish of Glasgow confine its attempts to obtain money within the limits which we have just now assigned, the most needful of these parishes would also be the most restricted in their means of raising a right parochial system. And on the other hand, the great majority of our wealthiest individuals, residing either in the best provided districts of the town or without the limits of the royalty altogether, would escape the pressure, or rather what most of them would hold to be the privilege, of sharing in this dispensation of liberality. There are many such whom the power of our parishes may look up to as a kind of common patrons, and whose wealth may be regarded as a common fund, out of which it is fair to draw, in the way of candid statement and respectful entreaty, as much as can be gained from their goodwill for this best of objects. And while we abstain from encroaching by more than our fair share upon this wide and flourishing domain of our community, do we leave it to other parishes to enter upon it as they please, and to cultivate it in any way they will, and to call forth its produce and its capabilities to the uttermost. What we fear not to announce as our equitable share of this fund is just as much as we can possibly raise by means of a congregational subscription, as additional to and distinct from our parochial ones, or in other words, it is our intention to solicit aid from those who, without residence or property in the parish, have nevertheless seats in the Church of St. John. Our firm and confident answer to every charge of unfair usurpation on the means of General Glasgow for the furtherance of an object connected with the peculiar good of only one of its parishes is that ours is among the poorest of the city parishes, and ours is not the wealthiest of the city congregations. Should there be another parish poorer than ours, and with a congregation not so wealthy, we do not ask it to restrict its operations for aid within the limits with which we have prescribed for ourselves. After it has made the most of its parish and congregation, it will have a still untrodden field among those most affluent of our citizens, who have no peculiar connection with either, but who, in extending their patronage to the schooling of an unprovided district of the town, will find an ample scope for one of the most promising and productive of all charities. On this field, the Committee for Education in the Parish of St. John do not propose to enter, insomuch that if a wealthy individual, not a parishioner, not a proprietor, and not a sitter in the Church of St. John, should offer 10 guineas for the furtherance of our undertaking, we honestly affirm that it were in far more delightful harmony with all our wishes, did he reserve this money and augment it to the gift of 100 guineas in behalf of another district still more needy and unprovided than our own. Nor would we feel such interest and alacrity in this our parochial undertaking, did we not believe that the plan was equally competent and equally effective for all the other parishes of Glasgow, and that it thus admitted of being so multiplied and transferred to the other districts both of our city and suburb populations as to offer by far the likeliest method of rearing a permanent security for the good and Christian education of all our families. It is in the power of any munificent individual to bring this matter to the test, so as to ascertain in a few months whether the charm which we have ascribed to locality be of an ideal or of a soundly experimental character. We do not suppose him to be either a sitter in the Church of St. John, or at all connected, either by residence or property, with the parish. Let him dwell without the limits of the royalty, and have no congregational bond of alliance with any part of the city, excepting, perhaps, the very wealthiest of its districts. Should he, in these circumstances, select the most destitute of its parishes as his own chosen field on which he might lavish all his influence and all his liberality? Should he, for this purpose, head an enterprise for schools by his own princely donation, and interest his personal friends, and encourage by his example and his exertions any parochial committee that may be formed, and spirit on the undertaking to the erection of one fabric and to a fresh exertion for another, and to the anticipation for a third, he will soon feel how much more effective a hold of him Such a plan of operations for 10,000 people has, then, a similar plan for 100,000. He will thus try the comparison of strength between a local and a universal interest and find how greatly the former, by the constitution of our nature, predominates, and how, by concentrating his attentions upon one district, his whole heart and endeavor are far more riveted to the cause of its moral cultivation than if he had merged himself among the generalities of a wider but more hopeless undertaking. He will, after having planted the cause in this his adopted and, on that very account, his favorite and beloved vineyard, continue to water it just because he had planted it. Nor will he feel it possible to cease from fostering his own parochial establishment till he had brought it on to its full-grown maturity. All the members of that body of subscription with which he is associated will just feel as he does, and the very same local interest, which does so much to stimulate the activity of the doer, will also stimulate, beyond all calculation, the liberality of the giver. The cause will be nobly seconded in the parish itself, which is the field of this operation, and its contribution for its own schools will exceed, by many times, any contribution to which it could possibly be called out, for the more extended, but, to it, greatly less exciting cause of schools in Glasgow. This is not philanthropy bounding herself round with narrow and unsocial limitations. It is philanthropy devising the way in which the greatest amount of good may be rendered to our species. And for this purpose, availing herself of a principle which, however neglected and lying in unobserved concealment heretofore, will, we trust, be mightily instrumental in calling forth a great resurrection of all that is wise and moral and salutary in our land. Let one set of men foster the attentions and reiterate the labors of benevolence upon one assigned and overtakable district. Let our great towns be localized into separate portions, and men be called out for thoroughly pervading each of them, and laboriously doing in detail what has long been so vainly and ambitiously attempted en masse. Let each separate agency link itself with a subject that there is some hope of completely finishing, and thus suit the dimensions of the enterprise to the real mediocrity of human power. Then, in this humbler but sounder way of it, a universal result will be far more surely and speedily obtained than it ever can be by the airy, unproductive magnificence, as impotent as it is imposing, of widely comprehending plans and great national undertakings. We have one remark to offer for the purpose of acquitting ourselves in full of the imputation of monopoly. There are many sitters in the Church of St. John's who have also seats elsewhere. We shall apply to them for aid in our parochial undertaking. But we beg to assure them that, instead of their entire offering to the cause, it would be far more consonant both to our views of justice and to our desire of extending this benefit beyond the limit of our own parish, if we were only admitted to a proportional share of their liberality. The extra parochial sitters in the Church of St. John's will forgive the following observation. They are not parishioners, but they occupy the place of parishioners. They get the Sabbath accommodation which, but for them, parishioners would have gotten. And we assure them that, by helping on the cause of weekday instruction in the parish, they will make the kindest and most suitable atonement for such a deprivation. To have a sufficient conception of the style in which the cause that we are now pleading for deserves to be supported, it should be considered how much there is to be done, and how great the benefit is that will accrue from the doing of it. Ever since the first institution of schools in Scotland, towns have grown, and the provision for education has not grown along with them. The population greatly outstrips the endowed schools, and the object now is to establish as many schools as shall overtake the population. Thus, to recover the distance we have lost, thus, to repair the negligence of upwards of two centuries, thus, to do in a few years the work which should have been gradually advancing along the lapse of several generations, may well appear an enterprise so vast as to border on the romantic. And it is not to be disguised that it is only on the strength of large sums and large sacrifices that we can at all look for its entire and speedy accomplishment. And yet we will not despair of this cause when we think of its many recommendations. And that, with all its cost, it would still form the best and the cheapest defense of our nation against the misrule of the fiercer and more untoward passions of our nature. And that the true secret for managing a people is not so much to curb as to enlighten them. And that a moral is a far mightier operation than a physical force in controlling the elements of political disorder. And that to give a certainty to the habit of education in towns is to do for them that which has visibly raised the whole peasantry of Scotland, both in intelligence and virtue, above the level of any other population. There is one encouraging circumstance in this charity. It is not, like many others, interminable. An assignable sum of money will suffice for it, and suffice for it conclusively. Every mite of contribution brings it nearer to its fulfillment. When schools and schoolhouses are built, and salaries are provided, and a sum is raised for the calculable object of repairing our edifices, or of so extending them as to meet the growing exigencies of a growing population, the undertaking is done, and the parish, permanently translated into the condition of a country parish, as it regards schools, is upheld in a high tone of scholarship throughout all its succeeding generations. Under such a system as has now been proposed, the efforts of respectable and well-taught men may, in the capacity of teachers, be brought to bear on the very humblest classes of society. Linked with the parish, by the ties both of residence and of office, they might bring a mighty contribution of good to its moral agency. They would occupy what at present is an unfilled gap between the higher and the lower orders, fitted for intercourse with the former and familiarized to the latter both by local and official relationship. Let them have an honest zeal on the side of Christianity, and the effect of their frequent and extensive minglings with the people would be beyond the reach of our present calculation. Those apparently outcast and outlandish features, which have had such time to grow, and to gather and to settle into obstinacy, on the aspect of a neglected race, would soften and give way under the influences of this blander and better arrangement. It would do more than reclaim a parish. It would go far to domesticate it. Nor do we know how a readier method could be devised for consolidating the parochial system of our great cities, or for supplementing, till better and more liberal days, those woeful deficiencies which obtain in our ecclesiastical establishment. There are many gentlemen of our city, familiar with the spectacle of a public examination at our grammar school, and who have frequently enjoyed the gratifying assemblage of parents and children and spectators, all occupied with their respective interests in this busy scene of emulation and display, and who have witnessed, with benevolent pleasure, the honest pride of fathers and the keen rivalship which obtains among the most eminent of the young, and the expression of holiday delight which sits on the countenances of them all. And who must be sensible that, during the mixture of public with domestic feeling, in this little republic, where no other supremacy is owned but that of proficiency and talent, the differences of rank and the asperities of the great world are for a season forgotten. How far this may contribute to soften and humanize the system of human life out of doors, it were difficult to say. But certainly, there is nothing that we should desire more to see than a parent among the very humblest of our workmen, sharing at periodic intervals in this very exhibition, coming in his Sabbath attire to witness the proficiency of his children on the day and in the hall of their annual examination, meeting there with all that is respectable and virtuous in the parish, assembled to do homage to the cherished cause of education among its families, mingling with parents of the higher orders, even as their children mingle, and sharing along with them in the same delightful interests, and in the same pure and pacific triumphs. Soothed and elevated even by this transient intercourse with the people of another rank, and another place in the scale of society, and at length retiring from the spectacle with a heart more linked to the general system of the country. And that because this country has attached him by those very ties which bind him to his own offspring and to the sacred cause of their moral and religious cultivation. There cannot be a fitter occasion than the present for vindicating the wealthier and for soothing and reconciling the poorer classes of society. The latter very generally think of the former that they bear a haughty indifference to all their concerns. In this they are mistaken. The rich are not only willing, but many of them are earnestly and enthusiastically so, to forward the interests of the poor, if they but knew how to do it. And we trust that, in a cause so undeniable as the present, they will nobly redeem, by the generosity of their contributions, all the discredit which has been so plentifully cast upon them. On the other hand, the rich often think of the poor that kindness corrupts them into a habit of art and ingratitude. But in this they too are mistaken. Such a kindness as we are now pleading for carries not one single element of corruption along with it. It helps the poor without degrading them. The charity which humbles a man never makes him grateful, but this is not such charity. The erection of schools where education is so cheap that the poor will count it no hardship to pay, and where education is so good that the rich will find it of no hurt to their children to send, does not bear upon it any of the signals of charity. The benefit of such an institution is felt for ages after its origin is forgotten. And it will be the feeling of the people, not that they are brought nearer by it to a condition of pauperism, but simply that by being translated into the same facilities in respect of education with our country parishes, they have been admitted to the share which belongs to them in the common privileges of our nation. This audio recording was read by Michael Ives. I hope you found it enlightening and edifying. Visit westportexperiment.com for more audio resources, and where I write about parish missions, the care of souls, and all things Reformed.